Donalena Kitchen talks about food. Donalena Kitchen talks recipes. Donalena Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalena Kitchen. I'm Lana Noctigal.
And I am Chef Donna Prisgintas.
And we get together to talk about lots of things. Today we are going to consider plants and animals. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Support comes from Wheatfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames. Community-owned and community-focused since 1974. Open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatfield Co-op.
Thank you, Marlene. That was Marlene Ayersman. She's here to talk with us about animals and fun events coming up in preparation for the Earth Day coming up again in April. There's a lot of things to celebrate. She can teach us a lot about animals. But we have a little bit of unfinished business because last week on the Donalena Kitchen, Donna and I were talking about starting seeds for your garden.
I wonder why we would be talking about that this time of year.
Well, looking
out sort of hope springs eternal sort of feeling?
Hope springs eternal.
Springs, yes.
Even on a really not-so-springy day like today, but things will improve. That's what our engineer—
Hope is springing.
Yeah, that's what our engineer, Rick, said. He said, it will come, he says. Yes, it's going to be spring. It will warm up. And I already have many things up and growing in my greenhouse. And I'd encourage you to think of your garden. Think of something. Plant a seed and nurture it. And you can learn a lot
Wait a minute. Between Lana and I am the world's worst seed starter, and Lana is going to give me live on air instructions. Seed starting for dummies.
seed starting for Donna. There we go.
Dummy Donna. It's not a skill set that I am very good at.
Well, as we talked about last week, remember we talked about seeds being a little kind of self-enclosed bit of magic. They already include the germ of life, the potential plant inside of them. And actually, for the first couple days or even a week or so that the seed is in the soil with light and heat and moisture to get it going, it really has all it needs to grow and to start shooting up toward the sun, kind of like a chicken egg. There's an embryo in there. But there are things that we can do to make sure that your plants do well. To germinate, they need light, warmth. You have to create that growing environment outside. The world does take care of that sort of thing. The sun comes up and the rain falls down. But if you're going to do this inside, like on your kitchen window,
yeah, but my mine come up all spindly and they flop over dead. And
well,
this was not here, but in California where everyone has rats, I had some beautiful sunflower sprouts one day. And I wake up the next morning. In fact, the kids had brought them home from school, very proud of their planting. I put them on the windowsill. I woke up the next day. They had been mowed down by the rats.
That happens. I sometimes have mice visit my plants in the greenhouse. So the same thing to keep them out of your pantry, you need to put traps or encourage the cat and all that sort of thing.
No rodents allowed in the seed sprouting.
Anyway, to create a good environment, I want to talk mainly about some hints for your containers and hints for soil. You have to put these seeds into something. I know there's hydroponic sort of things. You can grow things with fancy additives and water, but I don't know how to do that. If you're going to grow
I'm frankly suspicious of this. I know this could get me in trouble with some farmers, but I'm really into the soil.
The soil is a good thing, and since we're in Iowa, I think that's another thing we should celebrate when we talk about plants and animals, because all species sort of depend on that sort of thing. One thing I want to say, and write this down, this is important, treat your soil as a living thing, and a real handy hint is before you plant anything into the soil, moisten it a little bit. And remember that it needs air in that soil and it needs moisture.
Wait a minute. Let's be specific. You don't mean just spit on it, Lana. What do you mean by moisten?
Moisten it with water. And I brought along some visual aids here. We'll hold them up to the
microphone. Yes.
See, I have a planting mix here, which is a little bit of garden soil, a little bit of potting mix, which can have some sphagnum moss in it. It can have some vermiculite and things to keep things airy, and it has some commercial potting mix. One good thing about commercial potting mixes is that they don't have any weed seeds in them. So remember, if you take in garden soil, you're going to get some weed seeds growing, but you can clip those off.
As long as you know which is which.
No, they usually have little pictures on the seed packets. It helps. It helps. You learn these things.
Read the directions.
Anyway,
is what
like
you're
I
saying.
Was saying, instead of you putting into your container just a bunch of dry potting mix, which actually is really dusty looking. You want to moisten it a little bit. And if you feel it, it's...
I'm feeling it. Oh,
yeah.
It is moist.
It's moist and fluffy. My thought is how to describe this over the radio. Make sure, well, if you're going to plant a seed, make sure the soil sort of feels like slightly damp. If you made a nice plate of brownies that were really rich and let them dry out a little bit and kind of crumble it, it's cake-like. It's cake-like and moist. If you squeezed it real hard, it would stick together, but you don't.
I think Lana is hoping I'll pick this up because she's making it in recipe language.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I understand. Right. Now, you did mention a trick about putting all the soil. Explain that one again.
Since I grow a lot of seeds, I have all this stuff to make the potting mix, and everybody can make their own or get it from your garden center. It comes in a bag. What I do is take potting soil or any kind of mix that I want to make, and it's kind of, everybody kind of
brownies,
makes their own. Think of brownies. And put it in a separate little pan,
like a tub of something.
Like a tub, like a dish pan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I add water to that and stir it around, and let it sit for about 5 minutes. And it soaks up the water, especially if this soil has got peat moss in it.
And then I bet you fluff it with your fingers, don't you?
You can.
Ha-ha.
Mix, fluff.
Ha-ha.
And then put it into your containers. And the one word that I want to talk about, I talked about damp soil, important thing. Another important thing is containers, drainage. Put lots of holes in the bottom.
So she's got these little yogurt containers here. Or plastic cups, and then she's punched holes in the bottom of all of them.
Yes. Keep that water moving. You don't want stuff. And you'll fill these little containers full of dirt, put that on another tray, on a cookie sheet or something, and as you water, the water has to go through, has to be able to drain, because the little seeds want water. They want a little structure to hold them in place. They want to be close to the surface because some of them do need light.
And Lana told me not to use egg cartons because they're not deep enough for the root system. Did I get that part right?
You got that right. I have tried things in egg cartons, and it sounds like a good idea in the beginning of March because seeds are pretty small. But seeds not only go up, they go down. And there's not enough down in an egg carton.
Okay, so I could say that's probably my number one mistake. Mm-hmm. My potting pots weren't deep enough. Now, the other thing you talked about is how to keep them appropriately moist. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, it's like I feel like if I don't watch them every 5 minutes, they're going to either be too wet or too dry. And I suspect this is where I lose a lot of the little guys.
Yes, you do. Think of... When you grow things, put them in a real handy place, kitchen window, hint, hint. And be aware that it's kind of like having a new puppy. If you're going to start some life, there's a lot going on. And so visit it at least once or twice a day. But a real good solution, if you're going to grow something on your windowsill and you're going to be gone during the day and you know it's going to be warm and a lot of sunshine's going to hit it, cover the potted seedlings with a piece of saran wrap,
This is before they sprout?
It can be before they sprout. You know, you don't want you just want it damp, but this is to hold in the moisture. Mm-hmm. And even as the sprout comes up a little bit, you can cover it, not tight, or a wet towel. In other words, you're making a little greenhouse, the moisture greenhouse. You want air to move. Occasionally, you lift that thing up and say hello and put it back. But that's a good way to keep things moist, especially if you're not there to visit it a lot. So there.
Okay, I'm going to try.
There
and
you go.
I'm going to try some, what's that Mexican sunflower called? Tithonium?
Tithonia.
Tithonia.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to experiment on.
That's a good one. Donna likes tithonia, and I like tithonia, too.
I like that word. Tithonia.
It's a Mexican sunflower, and it's just bright.
And the butterflies
orange.
Love it.
Yes, it's wonderful.
And it usually comes so late in the garden that they're still hanging around when the frost comes. So I'm going to try to get a jump start on them this year.
Well, best of luck. Do read your seed packet. See how deep those little seeds need to be.
Read the directions.
Read the directions.
If in doubt.
That helps.
Or you can be like me. I'm going to buy the rest of my already seedlinged, like my basils. I always buy them from Lana and other farmers at the farmer's market. But I do want to improve my skill set here. So.
Yeah, well, good heavens. You know how to cook for a crowd. You know how to cook all sorts of things. It's kind of like cooking. It is. But it's a different sort of animal.
But if the world were coming to an end and I had to depend on feeding myself, I might need these skill sets.
That's true. But if the world was coming to an end, I think the best thing we could do is talk to our neighbors. We have lots of skill sets out there.
That's true.
Oh, here, another little seed thing to think about when your little seeds are coming up. Most seeds come up out of the ground. And keep in mind, there's roots happening underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't look like much is going on top. There's roots underneath. The first two leaves that you see are called seed leaves or cotyledons or something like that. Those are not true leaves. Think of those as the little packet that holds the seed. That's a tiny little thing. So by the time it gets its first true leaves, which would look like four leaves if you're looking at the top, that's the time to think about, well, does this thing have enough? Does it have enough moisture? Does it have enough space? You might want to thin things out. So it doesn't really turn into a plant before the second group of leaves come on. So celebrate that day. And then they keep adding leaves.
So you thin when the second set of leaves
comes.
That's
when you can start, yes.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
That first set of leaves, they're still working. It's an infant. It is just opened up. So there you go. Well, that's Lana's quick and dirty talk about dirt and plants. And so that's our discussion about
plants. And we'll see. There may be additional coaching sessions later.
We'll talk about other gardeny things as the season goes on. And soon we'll have that to all look forward to and hope for good weather. You're listening to KHOI, Music for the Heart of Iowa. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can listen to us live on Tuesdays. We repeat the same old show 7 o'clock in the evening, if you can't get enough of us. And go to khoifm.org. That's the station website. Find all kinds of other great shows. And you can find a Donna Lana Kitchen website there. Enjoy. Enjoy. Well, we're back. It's a good thing to open our eyes and our minds to what's all around us. In the studio with us today is Marlene Ehrsman. She's the co-founder and director of the Iowa Wildlife Center. Welcome, Marlene.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So tell me a little about the Iowa.
Tell us about your wildlife.
Yeah, wildlife, yeah.
Wildlife is fun. Let me tell you, you guys have fun with plants and growing. You have fun with cooking. I have fun with the wild animals. So, yeah, and they can be, for us, they can be just any species that comes in the door. Iowa Wildlife Center was formed about in 2010. We incorporated, and our mission is to provide wildlife rehabilitation services for central Iowa and conservation education programming and teaching people about giving wildlife assistance, so providing them with some skills to help wildlife themselves.
Sounds like a skill that needs to be done. Where is the Wildlife Center?
Well, currently our office is downtown Ames here, just a couple of blocks here from the KHOI studio. And we've been there now for a few years, and we expect to be there for a few more years while we're building our center out on 75 acres of land near the Ledges State Park in Boone County. And we lovingly call that land Wildway.
Oh, so what you talk about building a structure out there besides offices? I'm sure the wildlife need offices too. What sort of structure are you planning on building?
It's coming in stages, and so the first building we're getting up is going to be our future storage and maintenance building. But it's going to be everything for us for a short time anyway, until we raise the money it takes to build the wildlife clinic and office space. And so, the wildlife that come to us are injured or orphaned or sick, and so they need special care. And each individual species has different caging requirements, different diet, needs different handling techniques. So it's pretty amazing to be involved in this and try and learn. You learn something new every day.
Wait, so where's your clinic now?
We don't have a clinic per se. We collaborate very closely with Iowa State University College of Veterinary Medicine and their wildlife care clinic. They have a small wildlife care clinic.
Okay.
And so the director, Dr. Bianca Zaffirano, and I are really interested in deepening our collaboration as we move forward with both of our programs. So we use them for a lot of our veterinary care, but we also have some volunteer veterinarians that help me whenever I need it, too.
So if someone should find, like, an injured hawk or something like that, what do they do?
Good question. For starters, they don't want to hurt themselves. So animals, wild animals, well, any domestic animal, they all have a way to defend themselves. And so you have to know what the business end is of these wild animals. And so for raptors, for the birds of prey, like a hawk, that would be the talons. The feet are incredibly strong, and those talons are incredibly sharp. That's what they catch their prey with. Mm-hmm. Their beaks are also sharp, and they have a good bite and can do some significant damage. But those talons, those feet, are what you need to look out for. So if people aren't comfortable catching it, I always say wear gloves for sure to protect yourself from any kind of possible disease or parasites or anything that the wild animals might have with them. or leather gloves to protect themselves from talons. A blanket thrown over an animal can help because it gives them that sense of security a little bit. It sort of puts them in the dark and enables you to grapple with them. So there's a way to do it. And so if people don't feel comfortable, I certainly tell kids not to ever try it themselves, to always find an adult, but they can always call us and we can talk them through it or possibly find a volunteer that has been trained and has the skills to help rescue an animal.
And this applies to things that have fur instead of feathers too. I suppose that, well, good heavens, there's fox, there's coyote, mm-hmm, here, mm-hmm, deer, mm-hmm, squirrels, and all sorts, and they all have sharp bits, and especially when an animal is hurt, they're going to be a little a little anxious.
Yes, and the other part of that, even if they're not hurt, is that they're afraid. I mean, you know, we are predators to them. And so that's an important thing to remember, too. And what to put the animal in is important. For example, for birds that fly into our windows, I tell people that often they just need time to recover, so to put them in a paper bag, fold down the paper bag. Never open the paper bag in your house because birds escape up, and then you'll be faced with trying to catch a bird flying around your house. So you take it outside and you open it up. But woodpeckers, if a woodpecker flies into your window, woodpeckers can beat them, you know, can get themselves out of a paper bag lickety-split.
Because
you learn the hard way sometimes, Lana. You learn the hard way. So cardboard boxes make great containers for a lot of species. Dog crates make really good containers. So there are different things that you can use. You can use yogurt containers for things as small as bats. It's all different, and we can help with that.
A part of this is getting to realize that we share the planet with other things. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily have to be overly afraid of animals. After all, they have as much right to be here as anything else. Mm-hmm. So if we can help them by getting them out of our house, for instance, mm-hmm. that might be a good idea. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. There was a storyteller called David Kling. Anyway, he had this great story. And the end of it was these guys in a bar, of course, somehow had gotten a hold of a beaver. And they thought they were going to transport the beaver. And the beaver is probably a pretty nasty thing. They put it in a cardboard box in the back of a van. And then everybody piled into the van. And they didn't get very far before the beaver got out of the box. And that was the end of the story, but it was told a lot better. But I thought the idea of a slightly mad beaver
in
a van.
Box.
Yeah, in a van with guys. That's a whole other story. But there we go. There we go. These animals do share the space with us.
Yes.
How did you get interested in working with animals? What was your background? What was your story on getting here?
I think I have to honor my folks with this because my dad took me fishing and hunting when I was a child, and my mom, although she didn't hunt, certainly she would go and sit in the car and wait. And my mom gave me the passion for the tender heart, I think, and my dad gave me the nuts and bolts of living with wildlife mm-hmm. and not being afraid of things. I remember we went out to the Isaac Walton here. Outside of Ames. I was born and raised here in Ames, and so was my dad. So Isaac Walton was important to our family when I was young, and we were out there walking in the woods, which seemed like a wilderness to me, and all of a sudden I looked down and my shoes were crawling with snakes. And I had evidently, I don't remember the time of the year, so I don't know whether this was a ball of mating garter snakes or if it was young that had just hatched. I don't have no recollection of that, but there I was faced. And my dad just said, "Marlene, stop. Just stand still. They're not going to hurt you."
Oh.
And told me what they were. And so then we just watched them for a while. And they didn't, you know, they soon moved off my shoes. But now if my mother would have been there, she would have had me climbing a tree quickly. So there's they gave me very different things. Then I went on to do a lot of volunteer work and went back to school and got my degree in fisheries and wildlife biology and environmental studies. So.
Oh, good. You follow your passion, you end up doing an important, wonderful thing.
Yep.
There's an event that you are part of that is actually started this month, but it's working its way up to Earth Day. Tell me about the event coming up.
Oh, we're really excited about this event. This is part of our way to provide some conservation education to the area, but also to have some fun and to connect with new people. And so my son is the executive director of the North Coast Environmental Center out in Northern California, and they have for many years done an event called an All Species Parade. And so I thought, oh, we need to bring that to Ames. We need to celebrate biodiversity. We need to celebrate, you know, all the species, including us. And we need to celebrate spring. That's, you know, the warming days, the growing plants and all of that. So we decided I I invited Story County Conservation Board and Ames Park and Recreation and Ames Public Library to be involved with the planning, and they have been. They've been great partners. So, yes, this parade will take place at the end of Earth Week. Earth Day is April 22nd, I believe, and the parade is April 25th.
Which is a Saturday?
Which is a Saturday. And so
that sounds good.
Yeah, and so that's the beginning of our All Species One Earth event. So that parade just starts it off.
Oh, how nice. Who can be part of this parade?
Anybody. It's a family event. So I sent a pattern for a crocheted turtle costume for infants to one of my friends. So you can carry babies. You can, you know, if you aren't motoring around very well, you can bring a wheelchair. No motorized vehicles unless you need to because of your physical state. But otherwise, no cars or anything like that. Bicycles
are
fine.
So this is to come in costume of something.
Yes. Yeah, so thanks for bringing me back to that. So
yeah.
So that's
important.
That
would be the fun part, right?
Yeah. Well, but you can come as a human, too.
Can I come as a Tithonia?
You can come as a Tithonia. You can come as a big blue stem plant. I don't care. I mean, we've had some mask making and costume making workshops that different partners have put on. And for example, at the Ames Public Library, they just had a butterfly costume making workshop. And so they had like 64 people show up. And so there will be at least, and that included parents. And so there will probably be about 20 butterflies in the parade.
A flock.
Yes.
So we will have color. Oh, just thinking.
And lovely homemade costumes then, I guess.
You were trying to create art with science
and
community.
Yeah. Oh,
And I'm hoping by that date we'll all be feeling very spring festival-y.
Yes, I would hope.
Masks, puppets, art and creativity, all with the celebration of the fact that we are part of a wild place. Talk about what is wild in Iowa? We think of wild as out there, and we here sitting on chairs in a heated building, we are not wild. But I sort of beg to differ sometimes. What exactly – define wild, Marlene.
I think we can certainly be part of the wild, and because if we're going to be successful at preserving our earth in any kind of sustainable way, I think we have to realize we are part of and not apart from the wild. So the wild can be in your backyard. You can sit and look at a square meter in your backyard and find wildness, I think. There are a lot of different species of ants. There are a lot of different species of bees and insects. And our yard is pretty wild. We don't really have much bluegrass. So we have a variety of plants growing up in our yard. So some are invasive and nuisance, and some are native.
Well, just call them assertive. They're assertive plants.
Are we talking about old Creeping Charlie here?
Creeping Charlie, dandelions, plantain. You know, it's part of – and all of those things actually are good to feed some of the wild animals that I get in.
Yes.
Is there a use for Creeping Charlie, then?
There can – well, bees love to pollinate Creeping Charlie.
Oh, good.
Charlie,
then I won't feel so bad about my unkempt lawn.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Very good. Lots of things.
Well, and I find, especially as the weather's changing and we're getting out a little bit more, because I always go and walk my dogs is my excuse. But being in the wild, in a poetic sense, I think helps us maintain the wildness within us, the speciesness of being human, maybe so we're not so in our heads all the time or –
We do live and breathe. We're part of this. And speaking of wild creatures, in the past here on the Donalana Kitchen, we have talked about the microbes that inhabit us. So I suppose somebody could do a microbe costume because, after all, there are things even living within us and all other creatures that help us get along.
Oh, the intestinal flora and fauna.
Yeah, intestinal flora.
Right.
It may be a little small, but let's honor that.
Well, and Sander Katz calls his book Wild Fermentation.
It is.
Cultivating the wild yeasts that are lingering in the air in your kitchen.
I love it.
Yep. All species, right?
All species. That's right.
I see here in my list of people that you're collaborating with, there's something called the Upper Story Studio. Could you talk about – there's a person who is doing the artistic
Yes, there's been a young woman, Molly Nagel is her name, and she opened up Upper Story Studio last year, and she's a marvelous young artist. And we first found her as one of our other planners, Mark Wiederlechner, and I stumbled into her master's thesis exhibit on Main Street. And
so she's a painter.
She's everything. She's a painter, but she also creates these beautiful full head masks of animals. And that's what caught my attention. And that's when I said, we need to have her and we need to do this all species event. And so Story County Partners actually funded her to do 4 mask making, costume making workshops. And and we've got a couple coming up, actually. Ames Park and Recreation is having one April 11th. It's called Big Bug Marionettes. So people can go in and make marionettes. And then Ryman Gardens is doing their own workshop, and it's on the 12th from 9:30 to noon, and that's natural materials mask making. So people can call Ames Park and Recreation or Ryman Gardens and find out more on how to reserve a spot in those mask making, marionette making workshops.
Boy, this all species stuff is very collaborative.
It is. I love collaboration.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Now, Marlene, you didn't say where and when the parade is exactly. Where does it start?
We start gathering at 1 o'clock at the Elks. We've got reserved that space in case anybody needs to change costumes.
Right across from our new library.
Right across from the Ames Public Library. And then we'll have that whole street in front of the library and the Elks blocked off as our staging area for the parade. So we'll start there we'll start the parade at 2 o'clock and walk down Fifth Street. And we'll go 2 blocks to the, what is that, west?
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll cut to 6th Street,
north.
A block north, and then we'll come back to the library. So it's a short parade.
A little loop for the short-leggeds.
It is, but we're just starting it out. It's a trial run for this all-species parade, but we're getting a lot of really positive feedback. So, yeah, it should be fun.
The possibilities for costumes are endless.
Endless.
My mind is already thinking, Creeping Charlie costume, Creeping Charlie costume. Well, there could be lots of things. So think of things you are there. I think all of us, some of the Native American tribes talk about having a totem or an animal mm-hmm. that you are close to. And if we all think really hard, I think everybody has something mm-hmm. that, all right, if you could be an animal, what would you be? Or if you could be a weed, mm-hmm. what would you be? And yes, there's a lot of connections there. So get out your glue gun and your yarn and whatever. This sounds like a fun thing to do.
And it doesn't have to be extravagant. You can just have a mask, a simple mask that you find online. You can print something off and color it and put some elastic on it, and you're good to go.
That's good.
So you must have some interesting stories to tell about animals that you've rehabilitated or dealt with.
Sure. I have many stories, and we could go on for a long time. I think that some of my favorite animals to take in are bats. They're all of our bat species here in Iowa are insectivorous, so they're out nibbling on all of those myriad of insects, from beetles down to mosquitoes. So they all have personalities when they come in the door. So they're all fascinating to me. And then I think one other thing that's really stayed with me, well, the first animal that I ever held in my hand was a robin. And I was a little girl, and I took it to the door, and it was back when they were spraying DDT. And my mother back then they were saying it was safe for everybody and everything. And so my mother didn't connect that bird was probably suffering from the effects of DDT. And she just thought it had some sickness that it was going to give me, and she told me to put it down. But that has stuck with me all my life, and just understanding that sometimes we don't know, but sometimes these animals who can't speak to us really need our help. So most recently was a coyote pup that I raised a couple of years ago. And that was...
How did you find it?
We had been called by the plant introduction station out here by Highway 30. They had 3 coyote pups running around, and they had mange. And they weren't doing well. They looked like they were starving. And so we figured out that they were indeed orphans. The one parent had been seen killed on Highway 30, and we don't know what happened to the other adult. And we don't know what happened to the other pups either. They probably succumbed to the mange. Mange is caused by a mite, and it causes skin irritation and, over time, infection. And then the infection goes systemic through the body and starts shutting down their organs. So we were able, of the three remaining pups, to actually save one of them. And we kept that pup wild, and she became a beautiful, beautiful animal that we released out on Wildway.
How did you keep her wild?
We didn't coddle her. We didn't try and turn her into a dog. We didn't, you know, we kept the visual element. We kept tarps up around her pen so she wouldn't see humans all the time. We kept
the
noise
down. So you put her in like a dog run or something?
Yeah, we put her in something like that, right, mm-hmm. a big kennel. Yeah, mm-hmm. And with different caves for her, different dens for her to go in. We put in logs and potted trees for her to shred and play with and keep her active and healthy and happy.
And how long did you keep her?
We had her for, I think, 2.5 months, I believe.
And what did you feed her?
Well, we started out feeding her with some soft puppy food and some infusions that a veterinarian gave me to add to it. She's really interested in homeopathic medicines for animals. And then from there, we gave her dead mice. And then I gave her live mice. I put in a big stock tank and put live mice in there, and so she could prove to us that she was capable of knowing what her prey was.
Mm-hmm.
And so we knew that she was going to be a great predator of some of those garden pests you all talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. How long does it take for her to go from the puppy that you found to release? How long? What amount of time?
Just a couple of months.
Oh, a couple of months?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's right. Things grow a lot faster
than
we
do. They do grow quickly. Yeah.
So
yeah,
you have to let her out when she was quite young then?
We let her out when she was ready. She, you know, they can survive on their own when they're, certainly when they're 4 months of age.
Oh, goodness. You're listening to KHOI FM 89.1. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about animals.
Coyotes.
We're back. We're talking to Marlene Ayersman about a wonderful event coming up, this month, and looking forward to next month when they will have an All Species One Earth Parade. What a nice thing to do. You've been listening to music by a piano player. Actually, that's original music played and written by Reginald R. Robinson. I ran across this nice young man who just played the piano beautifully, a lot of ragtime stuff, but other things too. I ran across him at Ragtime in Randall. They don't do that every year, but there's some nice folks up there that gather people for concerts, and one year they had ragtime. They do it every so often. Ragtime in Randall, right here in central Iowa. That track you just heard was called Tears of Joy. We can talk about Tears of Joy because there's a lot of joy in getting to know other species besides our own. Donna, you have been reading an interesting book.
Yeah, there's a new book. Well, it's new in this country. It's an English writer. It's called H is for Hawk by Helen MacDonald. And it's the winner of the Samuel Johnson Prize, which must be a big deal, because it's been in a, you know, like they talked about it in the New York Times and here and there. It's kind of making the rounds now, and it's described as one part memoir, one part gorgeous evocation of the natural world, and one part literary meditation. So Helen MacDonald, basically why I'm reading is because she's talking about how she is training a goshawk. So I find that really fascinating. But she's also talking about she's doing this to as a rehabilitation for herself when her father dies. So there's some of that kind of biography going on there. That part's a little depressing. But the story about the hawk is really, really amazing. And she's also talking about let's see, who is this? It's not E.B. White, it's the other White, who had written some a book about falconry, I don't know, previous to hers. So she talks about his work and the hawk itself. Now, do we have goshawks around here?
I've never held a goshawk in my hand. I've never seen one in the wild, but I have heard reports of people. And my husband, Bruce Ayersman's a wildlife biologist with the Wildlife Diversity Program, he would be the one to ask all bird-related questions.
Oh, very good.
He's my go-to person.
Well, they are listed in the Book of Iowa Birds.
Yes,
so.
Yes, they do come through here.
I mean, they're quite rare. She writes that they had actually become extinct in the British Isles, so they have imported some and brought them in from Europe. But she just talks about the falconry tradition. Which I don't suppose – do we have much falconry?
We do have a really pretty healthy falconry association here. And in fact, Kay Newman, who operates Save Our Avian Resources, or SOAR, over at Dedham, Iowa. It's a raptor rehabilitation facility. She's a falconer.
Didn't we have her on the show? We had somebody at SOAR.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's her. She was the one that introduced us to this wonderful eagle – last summer.
Yes.
And she came in and talked about not only eagles, but how we interact with wild animals because we hunt and leave lead shot sometimes.
Oh, yes.
Which is quite a huge issue.
Probably
not just for hawks, but for anything else that nibbles the lead shot.
You can think about that coyote scavenging and coming upon a deer that has been
shot
with lead, and absolutely other animals are affected by it. I think non-toxic anything is a good idea. I was thinking about getting rid of pests in gardens and things and or homes, and I think that some people have gone to, poisons for these animals, and if anyone has seen an animal die of a poison, it's a really nasty death. So I say, if you're going to kill it, kill it. Use a snap trap or, you know, shoot it or whatever, if it's legal, and because a lot of things are not legal, of course, to shoot. But, if you've got a pest, I think realizing that non-toxic is the way to go.
Well, I also have to say that even though the baits say that it doesn't make a secondary kill.
Oh, that's not true.
That's not true because my neighbors had poison out for their rats or mice or whatever, mm-hmm. and the cat ate it, and of course he died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be a big problem when people use a lot of poison baits because the animals go away and die, and then there are other scavengers that come upon them. And even raptors, even hawks, will take something that is not acting right and is in the process of dying, of course, and eat it, and then they die. So, no, it's a big problem.
All right. So even if it says on the package, no secondary kill, it's not true.
Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that in a blanket statement, but, you know,
well,
it would depend on the toxic.
I've read the package. It says that, and then...
Yeah, do your research, I always say. Do your good research and on any of this.
I'm with you on the snap trap. If you're going to kill it, let's just...
Let's go with it.
Yeah.
That's true. So.
Oh, I wanted to finish the coyote story. So when you let the coyote loose, what happened?
Oh, it was really interesting. You'd mentioned that coyotes are a pack animal, and yes, they are. We realized she was probably going to be okay. We had her large pen constructed out at Wildway, and we're going out there to feed her and preparing her for release. And my husband walked out there one morning and noticed a coyote on the outside of the pen. And so he stopped and watched for a minute, and it was a wild coyote touching noses with our coyote through the wire. And so my husband knew it was a male, because at that point the wild coyote turned and saw him and trotted off, but not too fast, because it stopped and marked its territory on the way.
Oh, so yes, I've seen them do that. Mm-hmm. Oh. They squat and pee.
Well, for the males, they'll lift their leg and,
dog leg.
Yeah. So she bolted. We opened the cage door one fine morning, and she vanished into the tall grass without looking back. So that was, to talk about tears of joy. That was a really, that was very cool.
So how many animals at one time do you have at the Wildway?
Well, since we're in the process of doing so many things to develop this, we network a lot of animals away to other rehabilitators.
Maybe the better question is, how many animals are you caring for in many different locations or have interest in? How many people call in when they have
a... Do you keep them in
your
kitchen cupboards? Oh. I can imagine taking them home sometimes.
Oh. That's a long story about bats in the refrigerator. But I had a second refrigerator a long time ago and that we didn't use for ourselves. And so I would hibernate bats in them in that refrigerator during the wintertime and then release them in the summer.
You are a very resourceful woman,
Marlene. Well, rehabilitators have to be resourceful, because no one pays us for what we do.
Do they hang, or do you put them in little boxes?
Yep, they do. They don't hang from the grates of the shelving unit. No, you put them in individual containers, and they hang by the, you put cloth in there so they can hang on it. So.
I'm thinking Tupperware. Tupperware.
Works.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
See, I'm visualizing it with this twig stuck through it or something.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah. No, not that elaborate even. So,
nice.
Yeah.
You mentioned mange before. I've seen animals that just plain don't look right. And mange is not just a coyote thing, right? It can be on other animals. I have a bird feeder, and of course we have squirrels, and squirrels are lovely, and they come and visit too. And this must have been a good year for squirrels. We had lovely, big, fat squirrels looking in my window saying thank you. And we had one that was just not doing well. It was like losing all its fur, and it was kind of like half the size. And actually, we put it down, because I was thinking that it could have infected the other ones.
Right, and as I said before, it's mange is caused by a parasite, an external parasite. It's a mange mite, mm-hmm. and they're species specific. So the coyote had its own kind of mange mite living
mange.
On it, and then the squirrel would have a different mite living on us. And I will caution people if they do come upon or put down an mm-hmm. animal that has mange. When an animal dies, the mites sense that, and they then crawl to some other living thing. So in fact, I ended up with mites from one of the coyote pups when it died. I took it out of the kennel, and unbeknownst to me, the mites found me.
Oh, like ticks?
Yes. And it was not fun.
Itchy?
It's extremely itchy. Yes, but because I'm not
a coyote.
They went through a cycle, and then they all just died. I was not the right ecosystem for them. My body was not right. So you just had to live through that cycle.
Yeah.
And I did get some medication from the dermatologist to help.
So how did you treat the coyote that had mange?
We gave it some internal, it's like parasite medicine, like you give frontline and things like mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. to your dogs and cats. So you'd treat it for the right parasite. Yeah.
And then nourish it and build it back up.
Yep, and the coat came in beautifully.
Well, no wonder she had a boyfriend already.
That's right. She looked pretty chic, let me tell you.
Oh, good for you. I saw just yesterday on 13th Street flying over the swimming pool. It's not called swimming pool. It's an aquatic center
yes.
complex swimming place in Ames. Three trumpeter swans. And I was just absolutely thrilled to see something actually so large
Were they low down?
They were low down. They were kind of treetop level and heading straight south. I don't know where they were going, but it was very important.
And did they make any noises?
I don't know because I was in the car.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're you know, that reintroduction of trumpeter swans has, you know, been such a success here in Iowa. And so it's now people are starting to report seeing them. And that, you know, you think about how we extirpated so many species and now they're coming back. And that's the hope that we have, is that we can, for all of the problems that we have on this earth, that we are actually doing some really good things.
So. We can learn to do the right thing.
Yep, we can.
Good.
So let's get a little optimistic here. Besides trumpeter swans, what are we growing back in Iowa?
Well, people have been reporting sandhill cranes lately,
That's right.
So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. People, you know, I've gone over to Nebraska to see sandhill cranes by the thousands, and now people are starting to report them, you know, flying through central Iowa.
Now, is that something that we had a long time ago?
I believe so. I mean, we were a prairie state, and so we had so many species back then that we don't have now, but also those that we've brought back, like the peregrine falcon, the river otter was not completely gone, but it was it had disappeared from much of Iowa, and before we brought that back, and ospreys.
Oh,
that's another species that was successfully brought back.
What about people's less favorite ones, like the predators? How are foxes doing? Is coyote the largest predator we have?
Right now, we do have, you know, there are reports up in northeast Iowa of, you know, wolf wandering in occasionally.
Oh.
Black bear wandering in occasionally. Of course, cougars come through.
Now, but we used to have all of those things, right?
It's
their natural territory.
Yep.
So.
And they would help us with this deer overpopulation.
Yeah, correct? I think part of it is we have forgotten how to live with larger predators, because right now we're the largest predator.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you take us away from the equation, the coyote is probably one of the larger predators. So we've just forgotten how to live with these large predators. But if you ever go camping in Montana or Minnesota or anything like that and experience the howl of the wolves and finding cougar scat or whatever, that truly – people do live with these wild predators.
Do we have any cats here? Do we have bobcat?
We do have bobcat.
We do.
Yep, and that was another animal that was pretty much extirpated from the state. But yes, it's back now, and they actually have a trapping season on them. So that's been a successful return.
There are successes, and I guess it just goes to show that we are all in this together.
We are indeed.
Let's celebrate the wild species around us, and All Species One Earth is coming up. Where can you find more information about All Species One Earth events?
Yeah, they can go to our website at www.iowawildlifecenter.org. We're going to have its own Facebook page, and we'll have a good web page dedicated to it as well. And they can call me at the office at 515-233-1379. Just know that we're going to have educational tables, exhibits at the library in the afternoon, and then a Douglas Wood and the Wild Spirit Band concert that night.
Oh, great.
Okay. Yes, great. Thanks to our special guest, Marlene Ayersman. Look for those All Species events. Also,
a few other things coming up.
Coming up, there's a talk on transgenic bananas Wednesday, March 25th at Iowa State University.
Tomorrow?
At the Pioneer Room. And there's a barn dance this weekend, so get out and jump up and down. And we're going out to more music by Reginald R. Robinson. Celebrate our connection to the rest of creation. We're all in this together. You've been listening to the Donna and Lana Kitchen with Lana.
And Donna Priskintos.
Excellent engineering by Rick. Eat good food and enjoy life.